From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the past 12 months when roughly 40 million Americans moved. That happens every year, by the way. Somewhere around 15% of the U.S. population changes home addresses. This hour, we're focusing on where people are moving by choice and based on where they find opportunities. And you can find all kinds of headlines declaring that the world is moving to cities. Brett Boyd, writing for Grayline, says, quote, "World populations are increasingly moving from rural to urban centers, making for larger cities with greater population density than ever before. This is a global phenomenon across the spectrum of developed and developing economies. We are increasingly becoming an urban world," end quote. And the data supports this. The United Nations and the International Organization for Migration both estimate that around 3 million people move to cities somewhere in the world every week. And consider this shift. In 1950, 30% of people worldwide lived in cities. Today, that number is now 54%. Somewhere around the year 2040, more than two-thirds of the world will live in cities. So you might be surprised to hear that the death of the suburbs has been greatly exaggerated. The Brookings Institution's Bill Fry published his Census Bureau population numbers review late last month. His call on the city versus suburb horse race is that the trend seems to be shifting toward a renewed suburban advantage. As CityLab reports, that claim is likely to fuel arguments that America's love affair with cities might be ending. Maybe it was just a trend. So what do we learn from this? Well, recently, local urbanist Arian Horbovitz offered his take, putting the emphasis on cities. He wrote, quote, "More and more, we are a nation that values fluidity, impermanence, and the shared environment. The former consensus of permanence that was a 30-year mortgage and a white picket fence may be slowly changing as more and more we gravitate to the wonders of the fleeting, the flexible, and the commitment light," end quote. So let's explore several ideas this hour. Is the world moving to cities, or does that only mean giant megacities with far different stories for cities and regions like ours? Should we want, say, Rochester to grow as a city if that means drawing from suburbs and rural areas? And what are suburbs doing about all of this? Arian Horbovitz is back here, the creator of the Urban Phoenix blog, who has us talking again. Nice to have you back here, Arian.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also, welcome to Heidi Zimmermeyer, president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. Heidi, welcome back to you.
Thanks.
And always nice to see Bill Smith, the Pittsford Town Supervisor, in studio with us. Thanks for being here, Bill.
Thank you, Evan.
Is the death of the suburb greatly exaggerated, Bill?
Well, I think it's greatly exaggerated, at least if the sales figures in Pittsford are any indication. For example, apparently sales of homes are down a little bit versus last year, but things are going at above asking price. And the typical experience this year has been there have been multiple offers above asking price for house sales in Pittsford.
Do you see this conversation as, you know, one where you can't make a generalization? In other words, Rochester is not going to be the same as L.A. or Chicago or London or whatever the case may be? Or are there some generalizations we can learn from data like this?
What, as between cities or as between cities and suburbs?
Yeah, cities and suburbs, city and rural population trends.
I think the thing that jumps out at me, especially as I read Arian's piece, is the similarities in aspirations and motivations behind those aspirations that cut across the urban and suburban landscape, so that we see so much that people are looking for, especially millennials, in the cities, and we see people asking for many of the same things in suburban areas, at least in our town. And that's factored heavily into our comprehensive plan, our active transportation plan to improve walking and connections.
All right, so as the hour goes on, we'll explore that a little bit more with Bill, because I think there is occasionally this idea that the suburbs are quaint, that they are sort of unchanging, a little more pastoral and less dynamic than cities. What Bill is saying is they are responding to some of the demands of people who are raising some of those same desires for city living. What does that look like in the suburbs? We'll talk about that in a moment. Heidi, how do you see this? You know, should we want cities like Rochester to grow, to become more dense? Is that a desire of ours?
I think it is for a lot of reasons. I think there's several ways this whole discussion sort of cross cuts.
Yeah.
One of them is with very big cities like New York, Chicago, L.A., Boston, places like that, where you have tremendous density, you've got strong public transit systems, and they have been meccas for young people for a while now. And so you see people get out of college and they go, I don't have a job yet, but whatever I get, it'll be in Boston, for example, or New York. We see a lot of local kids going downstate. But I think what's interesting about what's happening in these cities is that commutes are complicated, particularly in L.A. and New York and Boston, too, I would say, even D.C. and Atlanta, clearly. Commuting is very difficult. And when your core housing, and in New York's case, for example, the five boroughs, is so expensive that you get pushed farther and farther out. It used to be Brooklyn and Queens. Well, good luck getting a place you can afford in either one. The costs are driving people out of the larger cities, young people. And we know it anecdotally, and we're beginning to see it here with the tipped balance of brain drain. Some, you know, we've been worried about brain drain for probably 20, 25 years, to now our growth in the, you know, 18 to 34 demographic is actually, our growth rate is above the national average. So we're beginning to see people seeking a different kind of lifestyle. So technology drives this, costs and affordability drive it. When people move out of big cities and into mid-sized places like Rochester, they want a group of amenities, a way of life that has some excitement and some dynamism. And density has currency in the market now. So that's why we're seeing so much growth in our downtown. But it isn't just there. I live just outside of downtown in the city. And houses don't stay on the market for more than a few days in my neighborhood.
It's remarkable, the market.
And people are bidding up prices. So it's definitely a buyer's market. So we got to understand what's happening. We also know that that so many of homeowners are now in the rental market in this country. And rental, you know, not only it, in Arian's terms, gives you kind of flexibility and a way to change up how you're living and where you're living. But the, you know, the question of can I afford a house? When do you make that decision? And schools are the other layer that in a community like ours, when do you move into the city? And when might you move out? And if you're in the city, what choices do you have? So I think all those things are part of the discussion.
Now, when you say, by the way, you said it's a buyer's market. It's a seller's market, isn't it? Don't you want to be selling?
Right. Sorry. Reverse.
Okay. I just want to make sure I didn't.
You're absolutely right. Seller's market, meaning buyers are having to outbid each other to get a house.
Yeah.
We don't have enough product. You know, but we also have an awful lot on the multifamily side. We're building a lot in the center of the city. I know that. And the prices are high and that everything is leased. I mean, there is just a lot of demand for this kind of lifestyle and people are paying a premium for it.
Okay. Arian, now you wrote this piece because you wanted to sort of, you know, again, put a point on the advocacy that you do, not just for cities, but the different reasons and the different facets of why you think they are attractive. But how does this square with this sort of conflicting data we see about the world's becoming more urban, but, you know, suburbs, according to Brookings, are having a little bit of a rally, at least in mid-sized cities like this?
Well, I think it's interesting that the City Lab, you know, article that we kind of referenced, we were talking about a little bit earlier, you know, shows that in the last 2 years or so, there has been a general, this kind of decade-long shift toward, you know, dynamic shift towards city movement, to the movement of people moving back to cities, has backed off a little bit. And we're starting to see the suburbs kind of come back, suburban living kind of come back. And what you see a lot of this, you know, if you look back at kind of the trends of where our economy is, typically in times like this, you know, where the economy is improving, this is the time where you see mass exodus from our cities. And what's interesting is, and I mean mass, I mean people leave, people are gone. What's interesting is, you know, we're going through a slightly better financial time here. Our financial situation is improving, but it's certainly better than it was in the last, you know, decade or so. And you're always going to see this trend kind of back towards the suburbs when this happens. People make the decision they're in a better position to buy a home, to raise a family. So those decisions kind of lead to that more traditional American lifestyle. Well, I'm going to have a family. We're going to move to the suburbs. We're going to buy a home. We're going to buy two
SUVs. They'll go to school there.
Exactly. And school figures very heavily into that. You know, what's interesting, though, is we're not seeing that mass exodus. We're seeing more of a course correction, I would say. So, you know, people aren't leaving the cities completely. There is still a lot of city growth. There's still a lot of urban growth in our country, even right here in our community. So what's interesting about this time is as you look at this economic kind of uptick versus other times where there's been economic uptick in our, you know, in the last 50 years or so, it's remarkable how slowly people are moving back to the suburbs, I would say. And I think what this shows is this is just a small pendulum swing back in the other direction. I think you're going to still see an increased, you know, movement toward our urban areas. And, you know, something that Bill and I were talking about earlier, suburbs are doing a wonderful job right now of creating a sense of community, of taking those those aspects of urbanism, of a kind of what are typically known as urban amenities, and they're realizing that they need to employ some of those into their own communities because this is what people want. And so they're responding to that much, much better. And I think they're giving greater options for people to live in a suburban community but still have kind of traditional urban elements.
Go ahead, Heidi.
I think there are a couple of interesting aspects to this. One is that if you look at the demographic where people are settling down and having kids and schools become a factor, you do see people moving out, although charter school movement is causing that to be not as clear cut as it used to be. But the other piece is when you take a look at, for example, who's moving downtown, and we were at 3,250 people in the year 2000, we're at 7,200 downtown now, and that's just the core of the city. Who are those people that have moved in? And a lot of them are people like me. They are empty nesters or childless. They're ditching the big house in a suburban area because it's too much space. They downsize. They want a more vibrant, kind of dense living environment. And that's very heavily who's moving into our downtown, in addition to the other end of the spectrum, which is pre-children households. And so we're seeing both.
And again, here's another illustration of what Heidi just mentioned of how these factors and the motivations cut across both urban and suburban areas. So what are we seeing in Pittsburgh? We are seeing a demand from empty nesters as well as millennials who want to be in Pittsburgh, but we want a smaller place. We don't want to have to spend the entire weekend doing yard work. We have other priorities and other things we'd rather do. And so this factors very heavily into our planning. Another thing I think that cuts across both venues is what I call life in a human scale. And for those who haven't lived in a city before, it may seem paradoxical. You think of high-rise buildings and the congestion and the rest of it. But in many city neighborhoods, they lend themselves very nicely to a neighborhood feel. There was a feeling of neighborhood. There was a sense of place. There was a sense of connection to those you live around. And very many people in the in suburban areas, they want to feel the same way. So how does this translate into changes in policy? For example, we have one major commercial corridor in Pittsburgh. That's the Monroe Avenue corridor. And if you're familiar with it, you go down. And between the sidewalk and the stores, there's the asphalt desert for parking. And as we have been coming to the conclusion of updating our comprehensive plan, one of the things we're calling for is to reimagine this corridor with mixed use, commercial and housing, up close to the sidewalk with parking behind. And what that does, and it really pops out when you look at the simulations, it looks like you're walking through more of a village rather than a major commercial area.
So, God, you're going to move to Pittsburgh, Arian.
I'm there. I'm totally there. You take Monroe Ave down to two lanes, one lane each way, and I'm there. I know that'll never happen, but
no. I honestly, what Bill's talking about here would be a major reimagining of, and I wonder, Bill, first of all, is this aspirational? Is there a timeline for this? Are the wheels in motion for this to happen?
Well, no, it's aspirational. I mean, it's part of the comprehensive plan. So this is something that's going to inform the judgment of the community as it revises its zoning code to make this possible. And this is something that's going to take place in an evolutionary scale over time. We're not going to pass a comprehensive plan and then the next week this is going to happen. But it's saying, here's where the community wants to go. There are other analogous examples, but this is just one example that really stands out in terms of what we've been talking about.
I find that fascinating just because other towns like Henrietta banned walking in 2007. I mean, you're not even allowed to walk there. I don't think that's true, but it feels like it. And I just look at what you're doing, and what you're actually saying is we're not just sort of giving lip service to the idea that urbanism might be able to translate to non-city centers, to suburbs, that people actually want a little more walkability. They want to feel like it's not just, as you said, sort of the parking lot deserts. That is that because they can walk to it or feel more comfortable? Would they park and then kind of take their families around? I mean, what's the vision for why this is going to happen?
Well, it's both. I mean, part of it's aesthetic, but part of it's the impact of aesthetics on the person who is in that space and who's using it. So, people will not use their bikes, for example, who want to use bikes, if they don't think they have a safe place to use them. So part of one of the things that we are focusing on and have been for the last 3 years in Pittsburgh is better bike routes, better walking routes, connectivity between the different trails and sidewalks we have, so that if you want to, you can walk a lot further and a lot farther in more safety than you can now in Pittsford. And again, that's something that's appealing to millennials. It's something that's appealing to empty nesters and everyone across the board.
That's really smart. Go ahead.
You know, the irony of all this is that the way we developed, if you look at Pittsford and you look at Fairport, for example, and I haven't spent a lot of time in Brockport, but people tell me that's another one. Those towns were built with very European, sort of New England-style town designs in mind, so that they're walkable, they're human scale, they're appealing, they're environments you want to be in when you're in those commercial cores of those towns. But a lot of what we've developed since post-World War II in this country really doesn't fit that model at all. And it's heavily dependent on what you need for cars to move really fast, how to park a lot of them, big box retail. We lost our way in a lot of our spaces surrounding not just our community, but
I mean, you're describing
many places. This is the America.
Some of what Monroe Avenue is,
well,
and some of what many
Jefferson
other corners.
Road Jefferson and Road and West Henrietta. And
the Ridge Road, absolutely.
Right, and we lost that. So when you have a town, the bones that you have in a town like Pittsford, for example, or Fairport, You've got the right bones already there. It's just Monroe Avenue kind of built itself into something else in the 1960s and 70s, and it's how do we take those places back and create livable places that people want to be in.
You want to add to that?
Yeah,
by the way?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Europe, and you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that you're seeing younger people traveling again, doing a lot more traveling. Obviously, the internet has. Every time I turn on Facebook, I don't know about you guys. I mean, I'm more connected a little bit with the kind of the urbanist society than maybe most. But every time I turn on Facebook, I see some European city. You know, I see Amsterdam. I see video of people biking all over the place. I don't know if you know, like 50% of people in Amsterdam bike to work every day. You know, I think there is more exposure now to young people than ever that the American way of life over the past 50 years of the car-centric society that I think we thought for a long time that was the only thing, that was the only way to live. And I think what we're seeing is most of the rest of the world doesn't live that way.
We deviated.
We absolutely deviated. Yes, definitely. We were the outliers. I think more and more people are becoming exposed to the idea that it doesn't have to be this way anymore. And I think people are getting smart about that. It's really, really great to see because it's transforming a lot of our communities. Again, big urban communities and smaller suburban communities.
You know, Arian, another thing about that is that a lot of these environments are alienating.
It's true.
And as people are looking for a sense of community, they want to be part of something. Mm-hmm. You really can't get that. And when you go to other places and you go, I want to live in a place like that, and you bring it back to your community, we start to see changes like what Bill is doing in Pittsford, which is absolutely brilliant work.
And I mean, it is undeniable, I think, that in many suburban settings, they lend themselves much more easily to this atomization of society. You get in your car, you go to work, you come back, you never see your neighbors. And this gets old for most people after a while.
Some people want that, but what you're saying is, on balance, most want more connectivity.
People want more connectivity to others and a sense of community. And one of the things Arian was just talking about, I think, is part of the motivation behind this concept that we've been working with, and I know many other suburban communities have too, called the complete streets idea. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, okay, you know, cars are a part of our life, and they need to be, and they're going to remain a part of our life. But our streets, especially in those what I call the human scale areas, we want to make sure that those streets and those streetscapes are not just for motor vehicles, but also they're for people who are walking. There are people who want to do shopping by foot. There are people who are on a bicycle pushing a stroller down the street. And that takes work. And it takes planning to get streets from something that's nothing more than a vehicle thoroughphare to a complete street.
I see Absolutely. The phone ringing now, and I'd love to hear from our listeners as you think about where you want to be and what you want that to look like and how you want that to function. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You're hearing Bill Smith, Pittsford Town Supervisor. Heidi Zimmermeyer is the president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. And Arian Horbovitz is the creator of the Urban Phoenix blog. And John emails the program to say that the irony is that it is now more affordable to me to buy a house in the suburbs than to live in the city because, to borrow a phrase, the rent is too damn high. So, Heidi, is the rent too damn high now? Are we reaching a tipping point for people who do want to live?
It's in interesting. Downtown. We've got, you know, as I say, 7,200 people downtown. It's like 4,300 units, give or take. And we've got about 1,000 of those are at the lower end, affordable and subsidized. And then there's a real scale. It started out with the first projects in this era of building that were like 80 cents a square foot, which means in a 1,000 square foot apartment, you're paying $800 a month. That 80 cents has now jumped to over $2 a square foot for some of the new product. Now, there's some new projects that are coming online that are going to be lower. But yeah, in the actual core of the city in downtown, the rent figures and the when we say, gee, someone's going to build condos for $350,000, that's a bargain. You say, oh my God, what planet are we on? That's really expensive. And yet they're all going. So, but if you
they're going as in they're selling. That inventory is moving.
Selling and going, yeah. Okay. And the issue is if you go just a few blocks outside of that into Neighborhood of the Arts and to Wadsworth mm-hmm. Square, Park Ave, Monroe Ave, my neighborhood, South Wedge, and Highland Park, you know, neighborhood, and other parts of the city too that wrap all the way around, you can find a huge range of what it costs you to either rent or buy. So I think you can get a lot in the city limits. If you want to live in the very dense part, which is downtown, the prices have been on the main higher. And so, like I say, people are paying for that lifestyle.
Okay. So you want to add to that, Arian?
Absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, obviously downtown, listen, people can't build high-end housing fast enough downtown, apartment living fast enough in some of these cities. People want this. They want this very badly. There is a huge market for this. It's not like these apartment complexes are going up and people aren't moving in. Tower 280 is... It's not full. It's almost full.
It's full.
It's been full. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People want this. And it's really interesting because it kind of draws on what I'm kind of talking about in the article that I wrote is people are willing to pay more money. You think about what Tower 280 has as opposed to maybe a home in the suburbs, for example. And I think what people are seeing is Tower 280 has everything right there. You have a gym. You have a kind of a communal area that you could almost use as an office space. You have... you know, obviously the apartment itself with high-end amenities. In so many of these apartments, I live in an apartment that's $1,000. My fiance and I live in an apartment that's $1,000 a month in the Highland Park area. That might sound like a lot to people that spend on an apartment. I don't pay utilities. You know, I don't have to worry. I go outside in my I have what is almost like a lawn. There's big trees. I mean, we're not just talking about downtown, like you said, Heidi. We're talking about there's a lot of spaces in this city where you can find reasonably affordable housing, and I have everything I need right there taken care of for me so that I can go out and do things like this. I have two jobs. I'm a wedding photographer and I work for the University of Rochester in clinical drug trials and I write a blog. I cannot be at home cleaning gutters on the weekend. I can't do it. I don't even have children and I don't have the time to maintain a full yard or a full home.
When you have kids, man, you realize you could have done anything.
Exactly.
I'm mostly kidding. I don't want to like condescend to the childless. I hate those guys. I don't want to be that guy.
Yes, no, absolutely.
I take the point.
Though. Absolutely. But the point is, I think this is a generation that more and more wants to be out there and doing things in the community
sure.
And less wants to be home, you know, taking care of, kind of maintaining. I think homes are seen a little bit more than in the past as burdensome. And I even hear that anecdotally from my friends, my connections, people.
Financially as well.
Financially as well, exactly.
The money pits.
We have a lot of phone calls I want to work through on these subjects, but one more quick point before we go to your phone calls. And I want to ask Heidi Zimmermeyer this question. How do we know that we're not going to create a glut of higher-end housing, rental apartments? How are you not going to wake up one day and say, oh my gosh, we've got 500 more units than we need and everyone was building and we all thought there was demand and there wasn't. And I'm not at all implying we are there or going there, but is there sort of a way to make sure that you are building with the demand that's going to be then a sustainable product?
It is an iterative process. We've got 22 housing projects in the pipeline now, another 1,800 and change units that are going to be coming online. We're still seeing very tight vacancy rates. I think there are two aspects of this. One is that we it's about household formation rates and how many people are living together versus everybody getting their own place. How much longer it's taking people to settle down with someone else and share a place. So all of those things. Plus, we got to look at the economy. If our region is flat and not growing, if the city is declining, then, yeah, we got to be real careful about overbuilding. But if we have very strong economic development stuff going on, which we do, very strong strategies in place that are really, you know, bearing fruit at this point, if we make the pie bigger, then Bill in Pittsford is going to win. You know, every town wrapped around this, including farming communities, will win. The city will win. And it's all about creating choices for people, watching the market very closely, mm-hmm. making sure we don't overbuild. And our developers are very cautious here. And so they're watching everything like hawks. And so they'll know. They'll begin to feel when it starts to get a little soft, they'll know.
Okay, let's get to your phone calls, and there's a lot to work through. Kent in Fairport is first. Go ahead, Kent.
Hey, I just wanted to chime in. I've been living in the village of Fairport for about 10 years now, and it's definitely one of the things we love most about it is that sort of human-scale living where everything I want is in the village if I was so inclined. We have a small market. We have the farmer's market. There's the library. There's restaurants. There's salons. And if I was so inclined, there's a gym right in town, and you can walk easily to the rec center. So it's been a very wonderful experience having those benefits of urbanism, of, you know, having democratic facilities that are available to everyone, having human-scale living. And to be honest, I don't really want to leave the village. I mean, we've made a number of moves since we've been there, and we've always strived to stay inside the confines of the village. The only thing that's sort of ironic and contrast with that is because of the sort of ham-fisted implementation of RTS when you get to the suburban areas, it's also a very isolated human scale area where anything else, if you didn't have a car, you're stuck waiting an hour on a bus to get anywhere, which is sort of a strange irony. But just sort of some input from someone who's living in one of those areas you were talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you, Ken. I really appreciate that. So let me turn to Bill Smith with that, supervisor from Pittsford. What he's describing is more of the kind of mentality we hear from urbanists like Arian, more of why people ostensibly live in cities and not suburbs. Is there more of an emphasis on this now? Are we just perceiving this because we're talking about it more? Or do you really think that the Kents of the world, there are a lot more of them, and that the suburbs have to try to incorporate that too?
Well, I think about it a little bit differently. Not so much that we're trying to import urbanism into suburban areas, but rather that as times change and people have different priorities in terms of that bundle of aspects of life that in their minds constitute quality of life. It involves so many of the things that you do find in an urban area, and that many different suburban communities are either very far advanced along that route, or have some other planning they can do to bring those things to their own town.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you think that that's from what you're experiencing as well?
Oh, absolutely. You talk about quality of life. I mean, that's just what everybody wants, right? Part of quality of life is having everything in close proximity.
That's what you urbanists think, but some people just want to be left alone.
Oh, of course. There's always going to be that element. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But the neat thing is you're seeing communities. I think a lot of it has to do with just an increased appreciation of data. There's just more data out there about what people want and what they're desiring. So I think communities, whether they're big cities or smaller communities, are just building a greater sense of, like you said, humanity, and they're creating centers and places and opportunities for people to come together again instead of separating. I think that's key, regardless of what your population is.
And again, this harks back to Heidi's comment about having a mix and having choices. And I mean, undeniably, in
Absolutely.
A suburban venue, you're going to have more choices in terms of being more spread out and being able to be more on your own if that's what you want. The idea is to provide the choice.
Absolutely.
Kathy in Brighton just wants to make sure we're thinking about everybody in this picture. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 71. Oh, my God. When did that happen? Anyway, and I have some trouble walking, and so it makes me a little bit leery of the term walkable neighborhoods. I would hope that we all keep in mind those folks, particularly aging baby boomers, who might have some difficulty walking as they age. And so we need to make neighborhoods friendly for everybody of all physical capabilities.
Absolutely.
Well, and the beauty behind trying to make places more walkable, at least the way that we've been trying to approach it in Pittsburgh, I know many other communities do, is that you are taking away nothing really from those who don't want to go by their own foot power and don't want to go by a bike. You are adding something, not taking anything away.
I think, too, when you take a look at, for example, Sibley Square and the Spectra housing that used to be Sibley Tower, part of that is for seniors. And what's interesting is it's all stacked because it's a 12-story building, and there are a lot of services and amenities inside the building, so how far you have to walk for things is less. And also, we've got Uber and Lyft, and you're able to get around easily without having to own a car. I think the world has changed in some really interesting ways. As I get older, and my mom is 86, and I'm thinking about all of these things now, and I think... what Bill and I were saying is it's really all about choices, that to have a really enriched community, we want suburban places. We want exurban kind of farm and very small town options. We want dense urban stuff in the center of our city. We want urban neighborhoods that are a little more spread out with a lot of trees and backyards. We want all of it so that depending on what you want, you're able to find something really great for your lifestyle.
Okay. Yeah,
absolutely. I think, the interesting thing is one thing we didn't mention in all those options like Uber and walkability, here in Rochester, the beautiful thing about being in an urban center is the bus. Now, the bus doesn't work for everyone, obviously, but it does work for folks with disabilities. I'm on the bus all the time, and I see folks get on that maybe do have some mobility issues, and that is a definite option for people. That's one of the reasons I think people are really turned on by the idea of cities, is because we're realizing again that this is a place that can provide a multitude of options, not just as far as what to do, where to go, where to work, and everything like that, but how to get around. Since everything is so close together, and since there are multiple options, I mean, I can think of, I could take a car, I could take an Uber or Lyft, I could take a bike share, I could take my own bike, I could walk, I could skateboard, whatever. I could take a
bus.
People
do.
Yeah,
they
do.
Whole skateboarding crew out there.
I can take a bus. If my car is in the shop, I don't, own a car currently, but if my fiance or I, because we're in the city, if neither of us had a car, we would actually function perfectly fine. There would be no hiccup. I use Zipcar all the time, which is a wonderful service, almost like a car share service. There are lots of options here in the city. That is the one thing I think for me is a big, big thing that cities can do that smaller communities unfortunately cannot. And that's okay. Like you said, it's important that we have those choices. But cities maximize mobility choices and chances for people to get around their city in a number of different ways.
They do skateboard, by the way. I was bicycling with my six-year-old in Pittsford on the canal, which is the best place for a six. It's an amazing path.
Awesome.
It really is a great spot.
Yes.
And we got blown by somebody on one of those motorized skateboards.
Right. Yeah.
Shout out
yeah,
to that
big
guy, because my son was entranced with it. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, they're very big in some of the bigger cities. Now.
Legal, I think. He was really
some
fine.
Of them are starting to pass some laws because they
the scooter situation is an interesting thought.
That was amazing.
Ask Minneapolis.
All right, so let's get back to your phone calls on these and various other subjects. Greg in Rochester next. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
This is real interesting to me because I live in the city but not downtown. So I live basically behind Rochester General Hospital. So right now I'm sitting on my porch, got tons of trees around. It's almost like living in the suburbs. It's very quiet, but you got to search these pockets out if you want a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's pockets in the city that are very pastoral. But, what I was saying when I originally called is that it's ironic to me that we had Midtown Plaza. We had smaller plazas in the suburbs. The suburbs used to be where you wanted to get away. Now, it's like, okay, let's get everything back the way it used to be. When the governments took everything away in the urban renewal type stuff in the 70s, and now they want to bring it back. Oh, let's just make it the way it was. And, I want to use the example. Those murals that you had downtown, the way it was, Rochester, the way it was?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen those?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, look at those. People all over the sidewalks, cars, all kinds of stores. We had that. And I think the big box thing is just a question of tax base. It's more taxes for the villages and the towns. So, hey, you went for it. And now it's like, now we got to walk it back and reverse it. So it just seems kind of weird to me that, I mean, I got a rustic backyard. I pay less here than I would ever.
But Greg, and I'm going to turn over to the panel in a second. What's weird about time passing and people realizing what worked better before and saying, maybe let's do that again?
I guess nothing, but, you know, the point is it was all here. And then it's always this move to, like, let's rebuild, let's, instead of fixing the stuff that's already existing.
I'm with you, man, but look, I bought acid-washed jeans one time, and I realized that everybody makes mistakes, and there's learning from the wisdom of history is a good thing. But go ahead, Heidi.
I think also, again, there's a very American story behind all this. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of federal policy that drove tremendous suburban and kind of sprawling development over probably a 40 or 50 year period in this country that was very specific, and it was driven by federal policy. We've also seen a huge culture shift in this country where, I mean, just look at the programming and the kind of cultural icons that we had were Leave It to Beaver and you know, those kinds of shows were what I grew up with. And now it's like Sex and the City, Friends, mm-hmm. Seinfeld, and Girls. There's a real shift that's taken place, and a lot of stuff fueled, you know, people began moving out, retail followed, then offices followed in the 80s, and the whole pattern of where people lived, worked, and shopped and recreated shifted. It changed. And now, look what's happening in the retail sector. I mean, we lost urban retail because nobody shopped there anymore. And now, big box department stores and that kind of thing, they're closing all over the country. So the world is changing. We're flipping back to a more communal kind of environment, whether it's in a beautiful town like Pittsford or Fairport, you know, any number of towns that we have that are really well put together, or whether it's happening in city neighborhoods or in downtown. There's a culture shift that's partly what's behind this, too.
Yeah, this is not just a fad. You know, I think that a lot of people think of this as this kind of a fad. You have to think about the things that the events that precipitated this, you know, as I talk about this kind of move towards the temporary and away from the permanent. Well, why is that? And, you know, again, in conversations with people, and you mix this with a little of the data, I think I have this theory that I think people of my generation and younger saw the generation above us struggle with the speed of life, with things just kind of sped up. There was no longer that expectation that you were going to be employed by a single employer for 30, 40 years. Now you might be employed for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. You might leave that job for a better opportunity. What do they say? You're going to have 3 to 5 careers now. This is no surprise that there is an element. I'm not saying everybody, but there is a definite element moving forward towards a more kind of temporary, fluid society, because the bones of what kept us entrenched for so many years aren't there anymore. So this is simply a response. This is a response to life changing, life speeding up. And I think us seeing the generation before us struggle with that so much, we're making corrections. We're saying we want to be lighter on our feet so that we can, like you said, maximize all the options.
And I think that's true for a lot of reasons. It's true for quality of life reasons, many of which we've mentioned. It's true for financial reasons. There's so many people coming out of college with a burden of debt that's equal or exceeds what their parents paid for a home. And they have quite enough financial commitment, thank you very much. They don't need to take on any more at this time. And it has to do with phase of life. And I mean, this sort of gets us into that's what's always the elephant in the room here. And what in my mind is sort of a built-in element of impermanence when it comes to city living, which is education in schools. So, for example, a few years ago, Monroe County did a study. I think they called it the Monroe 200 Millennial Study. And they interviewed a group of 200 different millennials and had focus groups. And one of the things that came out of that, these were people in their 20s. They interviewed them. How important is education and the schools to you right now? These are people who lived in the city here. 33%. They said, 5 years from now, how important is that going to be to you? 55% said very important, and a cumulative total of 79% said either very important or somewhat important. And that tends to be the trigger that causes people to rethink where they're living at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Agreed.
All right, back to your phones we go. This is Keith in Pittsford today. Are you in Pittsford?
No, I've made it to Victor now.
Okay. Go ahead, Keith.
15-minute city.
There's advantages both ways on city and in suburban. But I think what happened with Rochester is Rochester grew, it got wider rather than taller. I mean, big cities, when they expand, they'll build a skyscraper. They'll have retail on the ground level, followed by 10, 15 stories of offices, followed by 10, 15 stories of residential. And then everything just stays within the city. What Rochester did, and Henrietta was, I think, one of the first suburbs that I was familiar with. I lived in Henrietta. I remember when there was wide open space on Jefferson Road. But as more and more people moved to Henrietta, they needed grocery stores. They needed shopping because, okay, now we have a considerable amount of people in Henrietta. Let's have Southtown Plaza where they can go shopping. Then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. Now the dynamics of retail has changed. So if you have you have to have a reason to have middle-class people down in the city. Once you have a large population of middle-class people, you will have the support services they need. This is all my unprofessional experience. The other advantage of having a home versus the gentleman who has an apartment, you're right, he has no lawn to do, no driveway to shovel, but if it's Saturday morning, I'm working in the yard, want to turn my radio up to 11 and sing along poorly, I can do it without having to worry neighbors are going to complain. But the one question I have, cities, it might take a lot between government and industry. For example, New York City, if you want to live in Manhattan, you have to be rich. All right? I was in Europe for a couple of weeks, and we traveled on a high-speed train that went 183 miles an hour. How hard would it be to build a community, say, outside New York City, its sole purpose was to sell houses to people who worked in New York City? They got to work via a high-speed train that you left this one little made-to-order community that was strictly a bedroom community, travel into New York City to work, and then you come back. Because if you did that, not only would you have the bedroom community, you'd have to have all the other support services.
All right. Well, it's an interesting question. Thank you, Keith. Heidi, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because you have a lot of bedroom communities around New York. I used to live in one of them, and I have kids down in Brooklyn now. So, you know, it's true. People do want to be able to live in a place with a little more elbow room. But those places, you go to Westchester, try to buy a house there, good luck. Same thing is true for Stamford, Connecticut, and Greenwich. And then when you get down to Union City and Hoboken and, you know, the cities in the northern part of New Jersey, it is a very expensive part of the country. But you're right, you know, you want to be able to have both, and where you have public transit like the commuter trains that can make it possible to do that. We've actually talked for years about getting high-speed rail from New York to Buffalo. And we have some fundamental problems with getting over primarily bridges where everything narrows. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I think that's the stopping point for why that hasn't happened. But the cool thing about that, if we could ever pull it off, is that you could live in Buffalo and work in Syracuse. And literally you're on the train for a half hour getting to and from home, which is nothing in terms of a typical American commute. So you're right. You know, transit can do a lot to help you have better options as to where you want to live and work.
Bill Smith, you've worked in various forms of government locally, and you're a dollars and cents guy. Do you see high-speed rail as having a future here?
I question whether the investment that would be needed to bring that about would pay for itself or would be worth the investment. It depends upon what the demand is for the particular route involved. I think there's a lot that can be done to augment public transport in and around a city, especially a city like Rochester or a city like Buffalo. But it's very dependent on the specific circumstances of each place.
And some of it's chicken and egg. Let's just take Keith's scenario. Let's say you wanted to create a new bedroom community for New York City and you had a train that went, as he said, 183 miles an hour, and so you could live 90 miles outside New York City and get to work in half an hour. Does that community spring up and then pay for a rail stop? Or does the rail stop come to where nothing is and then people...
That's such a complicated issue.
Yeah.
That's the thing we're seeing so much of. It's really interesting. People talk about building transit within cities, for example, and that's going to the stations are going to create nodes, right? They're going to activate neighborhoods and things like that. And then once you do that, and there are many, many examples where that very much works, What happens is those neighborhoods suddenly become high-end neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly.
Price out everybody and do the same
There's
thing
no
over
guarantee
and over again.
That you're going to have a quote-unquote, you know, sort of affordable housing community that can become a high-speed rail stop.
Affordable housing is, in general, is the most complicated issue, or what, top five at least in this country right now. We don't quite know what to do.
Well, unless you incentivize it,
right,
or you have policies that require it. If you do any kind of funding or zoning, I mean, there are ways to do that. You just have to have the political fortitude to do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The shorter the commute in terms of time, the more expensive the neighborhood is going mm-hmm. to be. And you know, we see this underscored constantly. A few years ago, Gallup did a poll. They asked about people's happiness in life. They said most people, regardless of their circumstances, tend to be happy in life, with one notable exception across the board: people with long commutes.
Right.
And that may help explain why people are willing to pay a premium to live mm. in or near a city.
I mean, it's interesting when you look at Europe, for example, the model Europe, you can look at Asia, you can look at South American cities, all over the world, even Canadian, where if you are wealthy, you live in the core. And if you are lower income, you get pushed farther and farther out. In the U.S., that pattern has been reversed mm-hmm. in mid-sized cities. I'm not talking about the New Yorks of the world. But in mid-sized cities, it's the reverse. When you had money, you moved to a suburban community. And I think a lot of that was racially driven. I think there was an old infrastructure back in the 40s and 50s that people were like, oh, this is ugly. We don't want to be here, not realizing that what we knocked down, we'd give our eye teeth to have today. But things change. And I think that's when we talk about that culture shift that's happening. That whole concept is starting to at least even out, if not slightly reverse.
Absolutely.
Let me grab Robert in Fairport next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Early in the conversation, it was somebody said that you know, a lot of these apartments downtown are already sold out, and you know, they're luxury apartments, and you know, this thing and you know, for empty nesters and such. Why are we paying for the construction of these with tax breaks and stuff if they're selling out at a market price? I don't get that. I mean, if you look around the community, the broader community, there's a lot of housing development in a place like Farmington that's taking place, to the best of my knowledge, without any tax breaks at all.
I think it depends on what you want as a community. And when you take a look at what's been happening downtown since the year 2000, 52 buildings that were dead office buildings have been put back on the tax rolls and are now filled with people because they've been converted to housing. And so, and if the original round of incentives wasn't there to help make that possible, it's very expensive to take a building like that and revive it. And so if a community says, no, we don't want to subsidize that, the buildings stay empty. And so this particular community and a lot of mid-sized cities across the U.S. have taken advantage of all kinds of incentives, from tax breaks locally driven to historic tax credits.
It sounds like Robert is doubting the premise. Are you doubting that
right.
premise, Robert, that there's no other way to get these buildings back on the rolls?
They weren't. They weren't getting back on the rolls. They were all dead.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Continue.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I think that if the market bears this, I mean, they're indicating that the demand is there for this, then it seems that there would be enough supply without having all these tax breaks and whatnot. I don't really get it. To me, it just, you know, and I realize, you know, two of the panelists here are directly involved in promoting this sort of system to begin with. So it's not like they don't have, you know, a vested interest in things
well,
the way they are.
I can tell you, I don't make a penny from it, so I don't have any vested interest.
Nor do I.
Yeah. Other than to say that the issue is that people weren't renovating those. And if you're trying to do the renovation, we're stuck in a very flat market for a long time. Just look at what's happened to Kodak, Xerox, and B&L, how flat our economy has been for decades here until fairly recently. And there wasn't a market. It's not like you can charge what New York City charges and get those rates. Something had to trip start the market and create a new environment. And that's what a lot of the first, second, and third rounds of projects were able to do. And now a lot of it's still very expensive to build. And the rent structure that we have in this community won't support those projects.
I think, too, you know, look, every you turn on your car and you need an ignition. Something needs to start the spark. I don't like a whole lot of incentives personally. I don't like a whole lot of subsidies. But you do need something to start the process if you want to revitalize a city. And what we're seeing across the nation is the one thing that subsidies are that I'm for are really doing is putting people back in cities. Any way you can get folks living back in our cities downtown, and those folks are then going out and revitalizing the community around them. You know, anytime we can grow our urban cores, we're doing very, very good things for that area for a lot of the reasons that Heidi was talking about. I'm not a huge fan necessarily of incentivizing businesses, but when you incentivize people to move to an area, to move back to our cities, they will take care of the rest.
And if it jumpstarts the economy, the urban economy, that's important. We lost, literally, we went from 330,000 people living in the city of Rochester to about, what are we at, 206, 208, something like that now. We lost 37% plus of the population. City economies, municipal economies collapse in those conditions.
And again, whether there are incentives of one kind or another involved or not, whether it's a city, whether it's a suburb, any municipality is going to be looking in terms of new development as, you know, is there going to be a sufficient tax base at least to pay for the incremental costs of services, of the demand on the schools, and, you know, in terms of thinking through what's going to come next?
All right, 30 seconds to finish. I think, Heidi, I started the program with a frame that kind of may it seem like this has to be zero sum, either the suburbs gain or cities gain. Obviously, regionally, the goal is for growth everywhere. Are we going to get to a point where you're going to see that?
I think we're already moving in that direction. And I think that's where
the real
hope
is. And that's not just spin.
Nope. It's not just spin. We've had a lot to come out from under. Kodiak alone went from 64,000 jobs to like less than 2,000. And so we have a big hole that we've been digging ourselves out of, and I think we're well on our way.
It's not just been in any community locally benefits from having a city that has vitality at the center.
Yeah, I think so, and that's why I wanted to kind of just put that fine point on it. I don't mean to make it seem like it's zero-sum. It'd be interesting to see not only what happens downtown, what happens in places like the Monroe Avenue corridor that Bill Smith described. Really interesting stuff. Bill, thanks for being in here today. Really nice to see you.
My pleasure, Evan. Thank you.
Heidi Zimmermeyer from the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation, always generous with her time. Arian Horbovitz, thank you for saying yes and for being here and for prompting these conversations. Nice to see you back here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Online at the Urban Phoenix there. We're online everywhere on our various platforms. Rob Braden's the engineer. Megan Max, the producer. If you're in a walkable space, go out and walk this afternoon. I'll see you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.